All right, do you know what time it is?
It's time to do our Kegels.
It is, and this is the most, in some ways, my favorite part of the show. Because who doesn't want a strong pelvic floor, Twyla?
I think I want one, so I'm good.
Exactly. So this is the time of the show when we do our Kegel exercises. It's so easy. It's so simple and can be so effective and life-changing.
That's right.
And so we are going to go over the customized GynoCast world-renowned regimen.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Three.
Times a day.
Six.
Days a week.
9.
Seconds per Kegel exercise.
And 12.
Kegels in a row to make a rep. It's so simple. All you have to do is do 12 in a row, 3 times a day, 6 days a week, and hold them for 9 seconds. You will have a pelvic floor like a chain link fence. You will be able to pull a trailer with it. You will be the envy of your neighbors.
I think you will be, that's for sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the GynoCast. My name is Dr. Eric Hegard. I'm a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist, and I'm sitting here with Twyla Dang.
Indeed. I'm going to need you to sound a little bit more
Twyla Dang.
Happy.
Really?
Excited.
Really? Did I sound too subdued?
You sound a little too mellow, and this is not a mellow topic today, so I would like you to sound a little bit more excited.
Huh. All right. Well, I am excited.
Thank you.
I'm thoughtful.
You are thoughtful, but I just want you to sound a little bit more hype.
And all right. Well, welcome aboard. How's that?
That's my own fault.
And thank you for listening to the GynoCast.
You're messing with my levels. Stop messing with my
My name is Dr. Eric Hegard.
I just got them all right.
Sorry, I'm messing with you.
It's all right.
So if you're new to the GynoCast, welcome aboard. Thank you for joining us. We're excited, always happy to have new people being a part of our little family, which we hope you will join.
Yeah, indeed.
And if you are a repeat listener, thank you. How do you like that?
That is the best you have said it since we started.
Thank you.
I'm going to cut this little part out and just dub it in whenever you don't do it the nice way.
No, it is such, and I think both of us feel this way. I'm going to speak for you.
Go for it. You can.
Is that we both feel very fortunate and privileged that people listen to this show and feel like it is of value to them.
Well,
it's a big deal to
us. I've said it before, and I will say it again. I didn't actually understand what people said when they would say, if you find the work that you love and you do that all the time, it'll never feel like working.
Right.
I never actually understood that. I always understood you work, you get money, you take care of things.
That's right.
And this has been sort of a transformational experience, being able to be a part of this, because I work constantly. I am 24/7 right now, just always doing things related to this podcast and things related to the podcast network. And it has never felt less like work. And I've never felt happier to be doing something in my whole life. So it really is possible.
It is.
It is possible. And we are grateful.
What do we do here on the show?
We talk about anything and everything's women's emotional and physical health and well-being.
That's right. And it is a wide net that we cast.
Yes, we do.
A wide net that we gynocast.
Okay, that one, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I like that.
It is. We can talk about sports. We can talk about politics we do, and medicine, of course.
Yeah.
As long as it has some bearing.
Absolutely.
So, and oftentimes what we like to believe is that we talk about things that are important and things that that people need to know about, want to know about, but don't necessarily know where to go.
Yes.
And we talk about things that oftentimes aren't necessarily comfortable talking to your mother about.
Or, you know what? That's a perfect example. Yeah. These are conversations I am not having with my mama.
That's right. Exactly. Mm-mm. You know, and things that maybe as you're milling around with your Manhattan, which I also enjoy as well, which I make with bourbon and a nice splash of cherry juice.
Not a big Manhattan person.
Well, you haven't had one of mine.
Okay.
Now, listeners to the show may think that I am drunk all the time.
No, because we do talk about cocktails a lot at the start of the show.
We do, but you know, the point is that
they should know that most of the time we're recording like after business hours, so we're at the point in the day where we could use a drink.
You know, it would be fun sometime. I'm just going to throw this out.
Okay, go ahead.
We could, and because we can pretty much do whatever we want within reason, right?
Hey.
It's a podcast.
Hey.
We could, it'd be kind of fun to talk about the effects of alcohol on conversation, and we could have we could start out for the first 15 minutes totally sober.
Okay.
And then we would have a drink, and then we'd do another 15 minutes, and then we would have a drink, we'd have it goes.
By the time we get to the end of the podcast, we wouldn't even have it. You'd be like, Charlie, where are you? I'd be asleep under the table. I am a lightweight. I'm the person that could sniff the cap and is like, ooh, I'm drunk. Let's go.
Did you ever see there's a picture It was going around Facebook, but it was a picture of these people after, you know, there were like 10 of them, men and women, you know, all creeds and colors. And the first picture was them totally sober.
Mm-hmm.
The second picture was after one glass of wine. The second was after two glasses of wine. And the third was after three. It was hilarious. And the first one, they all look a little agitated, like annoyed. The second one, you can just tell they're a little relaxed. After the first one. The second one, they're smiling. People are smiling. After the third one, they're laughing. And so I'm not trying to promote the use of alcohol.
The social lubricant.
God darn it.
Believe me, I know.
We can never stay on task.
We're doing just fine. It's
all
fine.
All right. So
I'm excited. Listen, the reason we wound up talking about alcohol is because I said we were going to be excited today. I'm excited about the show today.
But you know, the funny thing about what we say is that, well, you know, these are conversations that, you know, you don't necessarily would have, like, hey, pass me the spinach dip. Hey, have you ever had this happen, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you need to have a place to go, a nice, safe place to go, and that's here.
And that's here.
But, you know, I think after three glasses of wine, you probably would have that conversation. So I, you know.
No, because I know a lot of people that are buttoned up enough that after three, I mean, there's a certain level of conversation they'll have after three glasses of wine. This would require you to have accidentally drunk the entire bottle of wine, and then you don't really start talking about your body parts and stuff until you get full on in the bag. And you have to have a level of familiarity with people that with, you know, like
that's
if you were, even a full bottle of wine wouldn't make me, you know, tell this much information at the office Christmas party. Mm-hmm. No.
All right. Well, so you get a sense of what we like to talk about. And so
indeed,
we're going to talk about a subject today, which I think is very important and very contemporary, which is cosmetic gynecologic procedures.
See, I told you I was going to be excited today.
Cosmetic gynecologic procedures.
Okay, now tell the folks in English what you mean.
Well, so
plain
what I mean,
spoken.
And let me just tell you this, that the numbers of these procedures, which I will describe in a moment, have gone up significantly. And for example, labiaplasty.
Okay,
describe it in a second.
You're not telling the. Okay, to the folks in the cheap seats. Would you like to know what we're talking about today? Do you want to have a pretty vagina? Because there's now cosmetic surgery you can do to get that.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
All right.
Today.
So I was, okay, you just burst my bubble, but
I'm
that's
sorry.
Fine. So that labiaplasty, which is one of the things I'm going to talk about, is the second fastest growing cosmetic procedure in the United States after breast augmentation.
Not surprised.
And so I don't care what adults do with their body as well as their, just so that they are well informed about the risks and benefits and what they're trying to do.
Absolutely.
But the thing that concerns me is that these procedures are being done more and more on younger girls.
I agree.
There was a New York Times article that showed that there was an 80% year over year increase in girls under 18 having labiaplasty between 2014 and 2015.
Which makes zero sense.
And so that's what we're talking about. So what is, as you said, what is cosmetic gynecologic procedures? What are these? Well, you know, I think what you said, trying to make yourself have a more beautiful vagina. Well, and that's part of it. But these procedures mostly are happening on the labia, the vulva, which is the external tissue, the vagina being the fibromuscular tube. It goes from the cervix to the outside. But so there are procedures that will help change the appearance of this tissue to whatever appearance you feel is
it
more
looks,
cosmetic.
It looks a little
aesthetic.
Younger, looks a little more, not in my opinion, but possibly in men who do a lot of viewing of things like pornography.
Right.
It looks more aesthetically pleasing in the way that they're used to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you have the cosmetic appearance of things, but also you may have heard of vaginal rejuvenation surgery, which the idea is to make the vagina tighter.
Right. And that's the most common one. If you're in my age group and you've traveled on any level of reality TV, you know vaginal rejuvenation. It is a hot topic on just about any of these, middle-aged wives of, you know, affluent or faux affluent television shows. At some point, somebody in the cast or the whole group as a whole goes to get a consult or goes and gets it done. And then it's a whole episode about the recovery and the hilariousness.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's becoming, to me, that feels like that's becoming fairly common in certain circles of, you know, women who do these types of things.
That's right. And I have
I have conflicted feelings about this for a lot of reasons. One is that, you know, I believe in patient, what we call patient autonomy, which is that as an adult, you have the right to do to your body what you want. I mean, we can all, you know, you can have a tattoo. You can, pierce yourself.
Yeah, I did that too.
People get butt implants and, you know, breast augmentation, breast reduction, facelifts, nose jobs, et cetera. And so I feel like it is within the right of a woman to adjust the appearance of her, her genital area. You know, that I feel strongly about that.
Right.
There's that. And then, but on the flip side, I also struggle with the idea that we continue to live in a society where we are being told more and more what we should look like. What is the definition of beautiful?
Right.
It's, you know, and so, you know, we are saying this.
Well,
kind
you know
of
what
person,
though, I don't actually. I'm going to challenge that just a little bit because I think that we've always been told that. I don't think that's changed. I think there's always been some sort of overlying societal standard of what's appropriate, what we consider aesthetic and you know aesthetically pleasing, and it does shift and it changes depending on the times. But there's always some sort of overall arbiter that makes that decision for us, and then we kind of have to live in it. As a matter of fact,
I what I'm going to do, which I rarely do.
Yes.
I'm going to agree with you.
Hey, look at that.
I think you're right. So, but let me throw this twist to it.
Okay.
That up until recently, people didn't really spend a lot of time thinking about what a perfect labia looked like.
Right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. The idea is up until, I would say probably up until the last maybe 20, 25 years, if that.
Yeah. And
all of sort of these aesthetic things have been very surface level things, like things that you can see when you walk down the street.
Yeah.
You know, not other things. But I think part of, and I guess this is sort of the blessing of the curse of us becoming more empowered about our sexuality, more empowered about our own bodies and about our wants, our needs, and our desires.
Yeah.
Now we have now shifted some of that thinking of we're allowed to own our sexuality is now sort of at loggerheads with what is aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
And now we're having this, now we're starting to have these discussions about, you know, do I need vaginal rejuvenation? I remember being a kid, breast augmentation was not a common thing. It was done, but it wasn't a common thing. It wasn't, you know, 16-year-olds are getting them, you know, just to get them. I mean, back then it was still a scandal for somebody in my town to get a nose job.
Right.
And it was never a nose job just to get a nose job. It was, I was having sinus issues.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had a deviated septum and then they got the procedure done. But now breast implants are so common now. I mean, it just in general, you know, breast reductions are really common now. I mean, I'm not even going to lie and say I haven't thought about it because I've totally thought about it as a mom of three who nursed three children.
Well, you know what I would do if I were you?
Just everything.
Split the difference. Get an augmentation on one side and reduction on the other.
Okay. I mean, not that I haven't joked about that before, because I have. I really have. But just
the idea,
like,
mix
you know,
it up a little bit.
Well,
Twyla,
you know, like, you know, so... what's funny that they were having the discussion that I'm having as a 43-year-old with my 40-plus-year-old friends. My most of my friends are now range in age from like mid-30s to like, you know, mid-50s.
Yeah.
We're all now having these strange discussions of, like, I'd say 5 years ago, we were saying, are we the kind of people who do certain things?
Because
it's a philosophy. It's not just you know, like, to what end beauty. And as a matter of fact, I do another podcast here with Natalie Webster called Twyla and Natalie, and we had a whole episode where we called it What Price Beauty, and we really kind of went at each other on like, what exactly are you willing to do? Like, are you okay? You know, am I okay actually going under the knife for a surgical procedure? I 10 years ago, I would have said no. 10 years later, I would say, we can talk about it. Let's discuss it. And then, I mean, there are simple things like the idea that laser removal has become so, you know, pervasive that, you know, now I'm having existential crises on, am I allowed to have gray hair down there or should I just be bald down there? Like, that is a thought I never thought I would actually have to entertain. Right. And to be honest, I shouldn't have to entertain it. And to be honest, if I were, you know, if I were as much of a, you know, strong-willed feminist as I like to say that I am, I wouldn't entertain it. I would just continue to rock my 70s vibe and go on about my business.
That's right.
But there, you know, there's all of these, like I said, that overall arching, you know, who sets the aesthetic has now, it's now pushing us to the point where the technology is now, and that's the scary part. The technology now meets the desire. And so now we have to understand where's the line for us? Like, because you do these things and then you can't take them back. What happens if 15 years having large labias is the thing, and then you got yours reduced, and now you don't, you
exactly.
know,
you can't put them back. Can't put them back.
Yeah, just like when I tell people with laser hair removal, okay, you're going to get all this hair removed from your whole body forever, but what happens when it comes back in? I'm not putting a wig down there. That's done. You can't get it back. It's gone.
You know, there is actually a term for God, I wish I could. I have this funny conversation with an anesthesiologist at work who has one of these minds that just remembers everything. There's a particular name for, it was basically like a pubic hair wig.
It's called a merkin.
A merkin. Mm-hmm. How do you know that?
Because I know lots of dumb stuff.
That is a merkin. Is that the funniest thing? Okay, what is the history of the merkin?
Actually, I don't remember the full history, but it's way older than you know, just like, it's not a recent development.
And it's not a jerkin. No. And it's not a pickle. That's what it sounds like. A merkin sounds like a... Okay, so later on in...
That's going in the syllabus. Boy, this is going to be an interesting syllabus.
Later on
week.
In the show, we will talk a little bit about the history of the merkin.
That's
so
funny.
But today we're talking about cosmetic procedures.
Yeah, so like the idea here is, I mean, I guess to circle all the way back around to the original point. Now that we have this technology, and now that we understand that there is sort of a beauty aesthetic that we've all sort of maintained or lived under this whole time, I mean, having the autonomy does not mean you should necessarily make the decision.
That's
right.
And again, I feel like with many things, I know you feel the same about this, Twyla, because we've talked about it many times, but the idea of protecting children. Oh my God. I just want to, you know, you just
well,
wanna...
yeah. Cause there's a whole, we tend to forget that the most vulnerable part of our population are at a point in their lives, particularly these teens going into young adulthood, where they don't even have they biologically don't have the brain capacity to make certain decisions until they're 21. The logic and decision making part of their brain doesn't fully form until they're 21, and then you're out here letting them, you know, you're out here giving kids permission. And I mean, mind you, I'm across the board. It's not just about this in particular, but I have philosophical problems with parents that are letting their kids get like tattoos at 16, 17, 18, that are letting their kids, you know, get major plastic surgeries or, you know, or things like liposuction or things like that. I mean, there's kids' bodies aren't even developed. They're not where they're going to be. They haven't even begun the process of what their body is going to be and what it's going to be capable of doing. And you're altering it. And keep in mind, you're altering them permanently.
Yeah.
Not thinking about, and there's a part of this that I always wish people would think more about is, you alter kids in a way to make them feel more comfortable with themselves in the immediate instead of working on their self-esteem so they love themselves as they are.
Yeah.
One day these kids grow up to be someone who falls in love and gets married and wants to have children. The genes that are getting passed on to your kids are not the new fun nose gene that you got that you paid for. It's the old nose that you were never comfortable with in the first place. And now your beautiful, adorable, lovely child has that nose. What do? Are you going to sort of revisit this self-esteem issue onto the next person?
That's right.
Or are you going to, how are you going to fight to find a way to love yourself enough to love your child exactly the way that they were made because it was the way that you were made?
That's right. It's a complex, you know, it's just, and I the purpose of this show today, I have struggled actually with whether to do this show
you don't want to glamorize it, but at the same time, you don't want to like shame people for making their choices.
Well, and also people need to know the information.
Well,
they need to know it's out there. You know, I do these procedures. I've done them for years.
Wait, really? Okay, I got questions.
Well, and I have never advertised and people,
well, yeah.
I have people, you know, through word of mouth. But, you know, and the procedures we generally talk about are things such as labiaplasty, which is where you know, if you Google and look up external female genitalia, you can look and see what we're talking about. But as we've talked about on the GynoCast,
if you're a girl, just get a mirror and look at yourself. It's your body.
Yeah.
Get comfy.
But, you know, the external genitalia include the labia majora, which is labia means lips. And the labia majora are the outer lips that have hair on them.
Right.
The labia minora are the inner lips that cover the vaginal opening, which do not have hair on them. Then you have the clitoris, which is right above. And those are the main, and then you of course have the vaginal opening and the vagina, but that's not the internal, or that's not the external genitalia. And so the things that are done cosmetically are, number one, a labiaplasty, which means you reduce the size of the labia.
Okay.
You can do, what's called clitoral unhooding, which is really, and that is just something where you basically, it's almost like doing a little circumcision. You're removing a bit of the skin that's overlying the clitoris to improve sensation. And then there is what's kind of fascinating, which I don't think many people have heard about, but hymen restoration or revirgination. And then, and just hang on.
Yeah, do people well, do that?
I'll give you a couple examples of this. And then there's what's called, many people have heard of vaginal rejuvenation.
Yeah.
So I want to go through each of these and talk a little bit about them.
Support for the GynoCast is provided by OBGYN West. OBGYN West provides the highest quality care from compassionate providers, including women's health issues, from general sexual health to pregnancy care, childbirth, menopause, and beyond. Whether it's your teen's first annual exam, a new baby's on the way, or you're facing the special challenges of middle age, OBGYN West provides a wide array of services. Their doctors and PAs are trained in virtually every type of OBGYN service and procedure. OBGYN West provides exceptional care for women.
Let's talk about labiaplasty, which is the reduction in the size of the labia minora. Why do people want that? Well, for two reasons. One is it's purely cosmetic. And some people just, you know, want to have their vulva, their labia, look a certain way, and they just don't like it. You know, they just want it smaller. And so that's just a purely cosmetic procedure that's done in outpatient surgery. It doesn't take very long. People, the cosmetic results are fabulous.
Okay.
And the risks are low. But there's all these things, there are risks.
Well, it's still surgery. Right.
And so, but the other thing is, sometimes there really are medical reasons for labiaplasty. And so I'll just give you, one memory I have, which is a woman who worked in, I'm trying to figure out how I can say this without, well, let me just not, I, okay. But she was in a work job where she needed to put on an outfit, a full body sort of suit.
Okay. Okay.
And so, and she actually found that her labia were so large that it would get caught when she was putting on, her outfit. It's terrible, That was really, and in reality, her labia were large.
Okay.
But, and that actually was covered by insurance, which is rare.
I was actually going to ask you, is any of this really ever covered by insurance? Or is this all like fully cosmetic?
That one is.
Okay.
And because sometimes you can make an argument and, if you can well document that this has been frustrating people for a while and that sometimes you can get it covered.
Okay.
But this woman, it changed her life. And she liked how it looked cosmetically, and she no longer had the discomfort related to that.
Right.
And that's real. And so that is the most common cosmetic procedure we do in terms of cosmetic gynecologic procedures. The risks are bleeding and infection and scarring, a cosmetic result, which is not what you wished for, and sometimes pain. And rarely, and the risks are low, but there can be pain that persists, and you've got a lot of nerves down there.
Yeah.
And so these are things where this is why whenever I'm talking about surgery for whatever reason, I really take time to talk to people about, you got to think, there's benefits, there's benefits to most of the things that, you would be doing if there weren't benefits, but there's also risks, and the risks are real.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you got to think about this stuff. The other, hymen restoration, which is called revirgination. And there are people, I've had people who just, I had this woman one time who just, she'd been married for a long time and she just kind of wanted to do it as sort of a surprise for her husband. They'd been married for a long time.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's just, and this was a woman, she was older, she was middle-aged, she was smart. We talked about the risks and the benefits and, she wanted to do it and she loved it.
I guess.
I know.
I mean, to each his own.
And,
wow.
This is an idea of autonomy, risks, and benefits. For this procedure, the risks are low. and the benefits are whatever you wish them to be.
Yeah.
But the other one that was something that was very poignant to me, and I remember, was a young woman from East Asia, and she was going back home to get married.
Oh, so she had to, but that's like,
yeah, she
we're not going to talk about the murky water. And she was
not,
that.
And this was not a minor thing to her, and she was going home to marry.
Oh no, I understand.
And she was nervous because she felt like if this could not be done, she could actually be in danger because she was not a virgin, as you can, and she'd been living here and had been sexually active, and now she was going back, and you can argue the morality of that or whatever, but to me it was just, you want this done because you are, you know, this is not, this
listen,
is a,
there are cultural things at work, yeah. Sometimes that it is, you know, you need to do what you need to do. Like I said, I happen to be an honesty is the best policy kind of gal. So I probably wouldn't wind up in this situation because they probably would have cast me out by now.
They would have burned you.
Yeah.
Alive.
Well, this is the thing. I'm not a typical rule follower anyway. So yeah, I probably wouldn't have been the best fit for this, but I can understand that if you agreed to it and you're getting there and you know, there's going to be certain expectations and they're going to want to have you prove their expectations, then yeah. I mean, if this is available to you and you got the money and you're willing to, you know, you willing to guard that secret and take it to death with you, go for it. You know, that's a lot. Well, I just feel like that's too much work.
Yeah. You know, I know it's hard for those of us who kind of live in this situation to realize how, you know, people do things that are, you know, we all do unpredictable and things, perhaps we wish in retrospect we hadn't done. But you know, most of the time we don't fear for our safety if other people find out. And so this was a situation that I remember very vividly. And we did this, and she had a fabulous result and was very happy. And so, again, this
good
is...
good for her.
Yeah, so this was done in outpatient surgery. Again, it's...
are most of these outpatient surgeries?
Yeah, they're all on outpatient surgery. So, okay. I mean, so you just, you know, go to a surgery
center. So what are we talking in terms of, like, downtime?
Well, it depends on what you mean by done. You know, labiaplasty, you are sore. And these procedures, you are sore for a while. And it's a tender part of the body.
Yeah, already.
And so you're going to want to take some time off from, obviously, sexual activity, but also just vigorous, exercise for weeks.
Wow.
You know, depending on which one you do, and sometimes longer. And labiaplasty, for example, that is a... you're sore. You're sore. Wow. Then, the clitoral unhooding is a fairly small procedure, which again is, the risk of complications is extremely low, and, downtime again varies. It's just a matter of how, active you are in your own body.
Do you find that people do that a lot?
That's the least common.
Okay. Is it more because people just don't know it's available, or because people just don't think it's something to do?
They don't know it's available, it's just not one of the things that, and most people are not terribly worried about the appearance of their clitoral hood. And it's just not, you know, people don't know about it, and most people are actually more concerned about their labia.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it telling tales out of school to inquire about, like, sort of the price range for these kinds of procedures?
These things, well, again, the only one that I've ever had any success in terms of insurance coverage was labiaplasty.
Okay.
And also vaginal rejuvenation in a different description. And I'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But it's a cash, you know,
yeah,
coverage. And they range from... well, depending on if you're doing more than one thing together at the same time, for example, for a labiaplasty, you're talking a couple $1,000s.
Okay.
You know,
that's actually less than I thought it would be.
Yeah. So, generally about $1,500 a side.
Okay.
So,
okay.
$2,000 to $3,000.
Listen, I need to stop sounding like I'm over here taking notes like I'm doing this. I'm literally just asking because I think people want to know. Don't judge me. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure it out.
And, virgination or hymen restoration is between two and they all range generally between $2,000 to $3,000.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, most of us were in a pretty big hurry to get rid of it the first time, so it just always amazes me that anybody would want to go back and do it again. But okay.
Yeah, and so and then the final one that I want to talk about, which is what we call vaginal rejuvenation, or what it is described as in the literature, vaginal rejuvenation, which is, you know, as time goes on, as age happens, as you have babies, and the vaginal wall gets stretched a little bit. And we all know that. And the vaginal opening is not the same, or the vaginal canal is not the same when you're 16 as when you're 50.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the question again, the thing that I always am somewhat conflicted about is that, you know, who should care? And any man should just be happy to be in the vicinity.
Amen. Amen.
Amen, men.
Amen.
But, you know, and some people, but some women feel like the sense of sensation that they have with intercourse is different because it's too roomy. Frankly.
I get it.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, it's not just about the man either.
No, I wonder how, I mean, I don't know if there's a study out there or if there's any stats to back it up, but I wonder how many people, because this tends to feel like we're having a really heteronormative conversation, that it's just men and women. But I wonder, like, what that looks like in the populations for, like, gay and lesbian community.
I would imagine that it's no different. I don't know, but yeah. I've never
I'm just curious
that,
now.
But I just think that, you know, most of us are, I mean, whether you're, you know, actual sexual, vaginal, penis, vagina, sexual intercourse is only a small part of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, but, you know, again, if a woman's sensation is changed because of her vaginal caliber, the vaginal opening or the vaginal canal being larger than she'd like, well, that it really wouldn't matter necessarily if you were gay or straight in that situation.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I have a couple stories about that, which I think is just, again, things to think about.
Okay.
Which is, this is a modification. I mean, the general way that we do a vaginal rejuvenation surgery is really a adaptation of surgeries that we've done for medical reasons for pelvic relaxation, for rectocele, which is when the rectum pushes out into the vagina because of a weakness in the connective tissue, the fascia between the rectum and the vagina.
Okay.
And so there was a procedure that we used to do called a posterior repair, where you would basically kind of remove excess tissue in the vagina, bring the connective tissue together to make it tighter, and also rebuild what's called the perineal body, which is the area between the anus and the vaginal opening. So that's actually where the external genital muscles come together in the middle. And so oftentimes when childbirth happens, that gets torn. And so it gets thinned out. And so you can tell, you know, the difference, you can actually measure that, the area from the anus to the vaginal opening. And in women who've had bad obstetrical tears, for example, you know, it can be, you know, less than a centimeter, half a centimeter. And prior to delivery, it could have been 3 centimeters. And so one of the things that we do when we do these procedures is we rebuild that.
Okay.
So that tightens the external opening of the vagina. And then by removing tissue on the vaginal canal, the tube, which is what we do for the old posterior repair for relaxation, in essence, you are taking tissue out and bringing back tissue together, the connective tissue together. So you're tightening up that tube.
Okay.
And oftentimes we're doing more than one thing. So a lot of, you know, we can do, you know, we'll do a vaginal rejuvenation surgery. We'll do a labiaplasty, a clitoral unhooding, and people will
just do it all together.
And,
well, yeah, because if you're going to be down for the count, be down for the count.
Yeah, and pricing is different for that. You know, you get
it's like a twofer.
Like as you can get discounts.
It's like sliding discount.
But you know, again, you will never see me advertise. I can't imagine. I should never say never.
Yeah, never say never, because I sure will post it on social media when you do it.
Well, it's just you know, the thing is that I just feel like. I sounds pathetic. It sounds tiresome.
No, it's understandable.
It's one of the few things in what I do as a gynecologist, as a gynecologic surgeon, that I really, I just, I go back and forth about it because I want people to be able to do with their body what they want to do.
Right, but you just wish they wouldn't want to do it.
Well, maybe. not all the time because they're, you know, but I especially younger people. Like I did a labiaplasty on a 16-year-old one.
Oh, yeah.
I did one time.
Yeah.
But it took, I spent a lot of time talking to the mom.
Yeah, it was a lot of back and forth.
And she had discomfort related to the size of her labia.
Okay.
She did. And so, again, I'm not trying to be judgmental about this because I just think that, you know, unless there's a medical reason for this stuff, I think that I would really encourage parents, and because sometimes parents are bringing these women, these girls in, is to wait until they get a little bit older so they can make the decision themselves.
Yeah. Making the decision there's a lot of things we let teenagers decide for themselves because they're at the age where they're trying to learn how to make those decisions. But those things are large and permanent. And I agree with you, unless there's something medically, you know, necessary, if it's causing pain or discomfort or something extreme, then yeah, I would put, you know, you should put a barrier on it. I, you know, like the same barrier to me, the same barrier that applies to things that we think of as completely, you know, superficial, like tattoos, like, you know, have a very specific ground rule conversation about anything that's like that, whether it's a piercing, whether it's a tattoo, whatever it is. I mean, we have an understanding in our family, that you're allowed to do these things once you have completed all of your education for you know, that you need for your career, and you've done your job for 2 years to make sure that you're in an industry or you make sure you're doing something that doesn't, where there isn't any kind of backlash because you've done something.
Yep.
And then we tell them, if you get to that point, you call me and say, okay, I've made it. I still want to get that tattoo. I'll pay for it and I'll go with you.
Yeah.
Because then we're all in the same ship. Now you're an actual adult, making actual adult decisions, making actual choices. And we were able to forge a communication between the two of us, starting out as a parent and a child, but ending with two adults being supportive of each other's decision-making processes.
Exactly. So again, you know, I think these procedures are things to think about and be, to really be aware and cognizant of the facts that, you know, bodies change and there are risks involved in everything, and to be sure that you're working with somebody who's done this for a while and knows what they're doing.
Well, listen, really say that, really hit that point home, because if you're and not like not to not to sort of push aside the point of the younger persons, because that is a, I feel like that's a sort of a bit of a separate discussion point, but for the ladies in our age group, for us, you know, for us middle-aged women who are seriously considering these things, who have the means and the money and the decision-making apparatus to be able to do this, do your due diligence.
That's
don't
right.
just decide, okay, I saw it on Real Whatever of whatever, I'm going to go get it done. Really do your due diligence. Ask questions. Ask about, you know, ask your doctor really specific questions. Do your research. Yep. Read up on it. Really ask about the important stuff, not just about what it's going to look like after, but ask about the pain level, the downtime, the cost of these procedures. If there, you know, if there's any sort of side effect, or could there be a side effect of procedures, you know, get a little family history, ask other members of your family if it was typical for things to look that way. And I know that's a really difficult discussion to have, but if you've got cousins or sisters, you can probably ask somebody in your immediate line. You know, I wouldn't ask your mom, but ask somebody in your immediate line, like, where are you with this?
Yeah.
And get recommendations. Don't just go with the first doctor you see in the on Google. I was going to say the yellow pages.
Thing is that you can, you know, if you Google labiaplasty or whatever, you know, there are people out there that say that they're the best in the world, and
they can buy that with AdSense.
Exactly.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, it's hard to know where to go.
Well,
it really is.
At the age that I think most women are at when they're really considering this procedure, we've got a network and we kind of know how to utilize our network. You've got a network of girlfriends. You've got a network of professionals you work with, or people that you know you can ask things of.
Yeah.
You can call your insurance provider and find out, you know, who is getting recommended for these procedures and if it's in your network. And then you can go do your Googling and find out names and see if there are, you know, complaints or, you know, if there's good reviews, and then ask your network, have you heard of this person, this person, this person? I mean, I just recently did a process like this myself, you know, for a possible upcoming procedure, and started to, hit my network. And the best part about hitting up my network and asking real questions was I wound up with three separate people in my network who are not connected to each other, who all recommended the same person.
Yep.
Which tells me that person is obviously doing some sort of good work, because you knew them and you're in this circle and none of you know each other, and you all told me the same person.
Exactly.
Then I was able to call my insurance provider. Then I was able to kind of do my Googling and, you know, make sure that they don't have any weird complaint or weird like Facebook post or something against them. And that all of those things were able to lead me to calling the doctor and just having a consultation, not a procedure, not getting something done, but then being able to go, I've got a pretty good, you know, network of people saying that you might be the person. Now I can sit down and talk with you and ask about my questions and find out what my own comfort level is with you.
That's right.
And then I haven't done anything yet, but it's nice to have the groundwork to make a future decision. Take the time to do the groundwork, because these are not simple things. This isn't like getting, you know, fingernail color that you can just take off tomorrow.
That's right. And so, and there are some other interesting things that are happening in this area, including some, you may have heard of, I'm not going to say the actual word for the company, but there are certain procedures that are using laser to the vagina.
Yes, I've heard about
that. And, you know, these things, I am holding on this. I'm waiting to get more information. I feel like it's still...
Is it so early?
It's a little early, and okay. I'm not exactly comfortable with this yet, but these are maybe things that are coming out.
Can I ask you, as a doctor, one real quick question? When you say like a procedure feels early, what's kind of the window for procedures like that to feel like it's been around enough, or there's been enough sort of data on it that it's okay to engage in?
I want to
know.
Does
it vary?
Yeah, it does, and I think it has somewhat to do with the safety or the risks associated with it. I mean, the riskier, or the potential, the higher risk of complications, the more data most of us would prefer.
Okay.
And so, but you know, I generally like to see things out for several years. And so at least, so we can see how things play out before I start offering it to patients that.
That's something you would do.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that.
All right. A merkin.
Yes.
Since Twyla knew what this was, it's not a type of pickle.
Nope. Sure ain't.
You don't get spicy merkins at
Cub.
Nope.
Okay, never mind.
So I don't even want to know where. So what is a merkin? Twyla is the only person in the world who actually knew this. A merkin is a pubic wig.
Yep.
They were originally worn by prostitutes after shaving their genitalia, probably because of pubic lice.
Yep.
Etc. But are now used as decorative items, erotic devices, or in films for both men and women.
That's actually how I knew about it, from Hollywood films.
The female version is usually made of beaver pelts.
Yay.
Hmm.
We can get fine human hair for premium Yaki wigs, but we can't get a merkin made out of human hair.
Well,
I mean, really?
Have that when you can have it made
I'm just saying.
A mink.
I know. Like,
well, the male version is usually made of loops, chains, or metal. Hmm. Okay. And it's much more related to the cod piece. We'll talk about
And everybody knows what cod pieces are. If you don't and you need a reference, just go look up an old Cameo video, because Larry Blackman used to wear a red one everywhere. That was like his thing. And that's how I learned what a cod piece was when I was like 12. A Cameo video came out. I was like, what he's wearing was that thing.
So the Oxford Companion to the Body dates the origin of the pubic wig to the 1450s.
See, it's been around a long time.
According to this publication, women would shave their pubic hair for personal hygiene and to combat pubic lice.
Which is, you got to do what
they would then don a merkin. Don a merkin.
Well,
I mean. Prostitutes would wear a merkin to cover up signs of disease such as syphilis. Okay, so just if somebody's wearing a merkin, I would stay away. Just a public service announcement.
Well, no, you can't say that now, because now it's fashionable again.
All right, if you were in the 1500s,
yeah, 1500s. I mean, merkin, in the aughts, twenty teens.
Lucy Lawless was fitted for a merkin in 2010 TV series Spartacus.
Yep,
but she did not use it.
Nope, but she told the story on all the media when she made the media rounds. She told the story.
She refused to, and why? Why was that?
Because she felt like there wasn't a need. She was proud of herself, let's say. Let's just say she was proud of herself.
In The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, director David Fincher discussed how a merkin was utilized for actress Rooney Mara.
Yep. And here's why. Because in today's day and age, the young girls are all indulging in the laser hair removal. So if aesthetically you were looking for that, that's not even a possibility. It's not like when you tell an actor to grow a beard for a role. We can't grow that back. And because full frontal female nudity is still the norm in Hollywood. Full frontal female nudity is still the norm in most, you know, rated R pictures, as opposed to full frontal.
Full frontal?
Stop that.
Full frontal female?
Okay, stop that. Seriously.
All right.
Because it's still a pretty common thing to have happen, aesthetically, that can be a problem, especially if you're doing quote-unquote period pieces.
Do they glue it on?
Yeah. Hmm. Like the same kind of glue you use for a lace front wig.
Okay, well, like I would know that. But okay. I'm glad we need to talk about that another show.
Yeah, sorry.
So one final thing in Stanley Kubrick's film, Dr. Strangelove, the character of the President of the United States, played by Peter Sellers, is bald and is named Merkin Muffley.
Wow.
On that note, thank you so much for listening to the GynoCast. Please listen in again. See you soon.